So, thank you, Scott. Thank you all for being here. Good morning. Today I want to tell you a bit about the theory behind an instrument which you can see at the meter booth right now, which is called Pario. And it goes back to some considerations between me and Georg von Unold at that time, the chairman of UMS, which is now part of Meter. We had the idea for the development of a new instrument for particle size distribution. And Sascha Eden is the one who wrote the software behind the story. Yeah, particle size analysis is one of the key analyses in soil science. You all know that. And one aim, for example, is just to determine the soil texture class, which is influencing almost any other soil property. Now, the best way to plot the soil texture distribution is by this cumulative particle size distribution, as you see here in an example. And the normal methodology in soil science is that you got the particle size distribution for the sand fractions from a seeding analysis, whereas you get the particle size distribution for the fine fractions from a sedimentation analysis. You see there's a slight gap for the coarse silt fraction, which can be normally interpolated. If you have this information, you can derive any other information about particle size distribution from the function. So the aim is to determine this function. Now, there are traditional methods for that. For many years, the central method is the one which was developed by Kuhn in 1931. It's called the pipette method. And the idea there is to sample an aliquot of a suspension in a certain depth after a certain time. And in consequence, the total amount of suspension will, of course, be a bit decreased. And then you analyze just the content of this aliquot which you took. The basic idea is that the sampling zone is very narrow, but already in the original publications of Kuhn, he showed very much that you really get a sampling out of a sphere around the point where you suck in the material. Another method is the hydrometer method, developed shortly after that, intensively investigated. There, the idea is that you use the principle of Archimedes and you measure it with this hydrometer. So again, you have this manual readings of the insertion depth of the hydrometer. And the less the density here is, the higher is the force which puts the hydrometer up, and you can read that from here. So it's also from 1930s. Now, our idea was whether it should be able to replace the hydrometer method or both methods with a method which is now called integrated suspension pressure method. And the basic idea is that you don't measure the particle content at a certain depth, but you really use the information about the particle content above a certain depth, so in the total thing. From there comes the integral in the name. Today I want to present you the theory behind this methodology, how we come from the measurement of from the pressure measurement to the particle size distribution, and these are four parts. The first one is the theory, then we go to the inverse problem and the test with synthetic data. Theory is basic soil physics, it's not so difficult. Basically, first of all, the initial density of a suspension is given by the density of the liquid of the suspension and by an added density. And the added density, of course, depends on the mass of particles in the suspension and on the space which is replaced of water by this suspension. So we have an equation here. And if you know what mass of particles you have, what the total volume you have, and what the density of liquid and particles is, then you can calculate this initial increase of density of the suspension, which is due to the suspension of the particles there. So the next step is then the pressure. This is quite easy. The pressure which you measure in a certain depth is, of course, given by the integral of all densities above this measurement depth times gravitational acceleration. Okay, so what we get is more or less a mean density times the height of the water column or the suspension column above. Okay, next step is then now basic to all sedimentation methods, whether pipette or hydrometer or now the ISP. It's the sedimentation of particles by Stokes' law. Stokes' law states that the velocity of sedimentation of particles is proportional to the gravitational acceleration, of course, also proportional to the density difference between the particles and liquid. The heavier they are, the faster they go down. Inversely proportional to the dynamic viscosity of the fluid. And finally, and this is the important part, proportional to the square of the diameter of the particle. So this is Stokes' law, well known and used in any of these analyses. Now, if you have Stokes' law, then you can rewrite it in a way that it gives you a relationship between the diameter of particles that reach depth C after setting time t, and you see that it's just proportional to the square root of z over t and the constant, which goes in here. And now comes the interesting point, because now you can say, if we know which diameter of particles has reached a certain depth after a certain time, can we say something about the particle distribution in that depth? And yes, that's relatively easy, because this particle distribution is just given by all particles which have a diameter which is smaller than this limiting diameter that has to reach the depth. So in other words, all particles which are bigger are below the depth, but at a certain depth, all these particles which are smaller or equal than this diameter are at the depth. In other words, if you know the d here, you can directly, if you know the result of the analysis, then you can directly say, okay, for this particle diameter, we have, for example, here 65% of all particles there. If the particle is finer, we have less, and so on. So if you have the particle diameter and we have the function, then we recalculate the mass fraction of particles at the depth. And this is the key of the whole methodology, because what we can do now is that we can say, if you look on the density evolution at a certain depth z at t, then it's given, of course, by this constant liquid density plus this added density on the beginning of the processes times the fraction of particles which are smaller than this d. And if you put this now into the pressure equation, then you see that the pressure which you actually measure at a certain depth, L, a measurement depth now with t, is given by this constant plus this constant initial density plus this integral on f. And this integral can be solved analytically for some distributions functions, but in a general case, you need to solve this integration of this f by numerical integration methods. So in other words, what you do is you can directly say what is the fraction at a certain depth, but now we have to add up at any depth from zero to the depth these fractions. Yeah, and this is the integration. Okay. Now we know how to forward simulate the density or the pressure in a certain depth, and the next step is, of course, now how we come to our desired f function. And we do that in parameterizing the cumulative particle size distribution by a function f with 13 support points. Two of the support points are given. The largest one is the value of 1, which is reached at the highest parameter, at the highest diameter at 2,000 micrometers. And the lowest one is 0, which we arbitrarily set to a diameter of 0.01 micrometer, so somewhere very at the left. And all the other points are more or less unknown. We don't know them. And the idea is now to estimate these values, which means the mass fraction at 0.63, at 2, at 3.6, at 6.3, and so on. So we have 12 unknowns, which we have to estimate, and we do that by matching our observation with our model. In order to match observations with a model, you need an object function, which you have to minimize, and the object function in our case contains the measured pressure series, which is compared with the modeled one. And it contains the measured data for sand, because from a sedimentation analysis, of course, you cannot get the information about the sand fractions. So you have to know the sand fractions from a separate measurement, and you put them into the object function. Okay, how does that work? We have a defined initial condition, which depends on the mass of particles and so on, a real system, and we measure in the real system the pressure in a certain depth. This gives us a temporal evolution of the pressure, which deeply decreases. Imagine for a moment that all the particles have the same diameter, then this decrease would be linear. Yeah? Because what you see is then that all the particles fall with the same velocity, so the added weight of the particles in the suspension would decrease linearly. we never have this theoretical ideal case, so what we have is a particle size distribution, and therefore the form of pressure decrease will always be like that, a concave curve. Also what you see here, or maybe you don't see it because it's very small, it's a log scale. In reality, if you investigate this kind of particle size distributions, you find a very steep decrease of the pressure initially due to the quick falling of the large particles, but then it becomes very slow. Okay, now we simulate the whole process as a forward model, the pressure in that depth with time. And when we simulate that, we of course have to assume a certain distribution f of d, so we have model parameters. And then if you simulate and compare the measurement, then of course you get in the first guess not a very good agreement. So what you do is you say, okay, we have to minimize now our object function. We do that by parameter emissions estimation, a nonlinear parameter estimation. We update the guess for the p, we get in a second approach a better agreement, and we do that iteratively until we are satisfied with the agreement. And this is the final step. According to some stop criterion, you say now the model and the observation is really in a very good accordance, and these are our final parameter estimates then. Okay. So we tested the methodology with synthetic data, which is not unusual today, because if a method should work, you first have to show that it can work, and later on you go to the reality. So for the synthetic data, we use a normal setup. You don't have to look on the details there, normal sedimentation analysis as you know it from pipette analysis or hydrometer analysis. So 1 liter of suspension, 30 grams of material, 2.65 as a density, and so on, 20 degrees, a bit of thing. So what you see here in the forward simulation is how the temporal evolution of the pressure change with depth is. Note that we measure just at a certain depth. Normally it's between 15 and centimeters. And what you see is that this pressure change is largest the deeper you are, and it's slower in the beginning, but the dynamics is quicker in the low measurement depths. So after 1 minute, pressure has already changed from its original values to minus 20 Pascal about in this case, in the largest depth. After a certain value, it changes further, and then the change becomes very, very slow. So this is after 1 minute, after 10 minutes, after 1.5 hours, after 15 hours. So here, in this case, even after 15 hours, there's apparently still a lot of clay or whatever in the sample. And now we use the temporal recording here, which is shown on the next slide for 4 different soil classes which we investigated. So what we did, we took the forward simulation, disturbed the data a bit, because you always have an inevitable measurement noise, of course. And what you see is now the pressure decrease for this scenario, which I showed you for a clay loam here, for a silt, which goes down steeply first and then flat, for a sandy clay loam, and so on. So what you see here already are the artificial created data and the best fit which we could achieve in matching this data. And on the next slide, you see these cumulative particle size distributions for these 4 soils. What you don't see from behind is that it's 2 lines. The gray line is what we put into the simulation, so we call it the truth. And the blue line on top of the gray line, or the yellow line here on top of the gray line, is the identified particle size distribution. So the method works with synthetic data very nicely, very accurately. The identification is almost perfect. You see here some deviations between the synthetic truth and the identification, but I guess no one of the practitioners will care about these kind of differences here. So it works very nicely. Okay, of course you have to test it now with real data, and if you want to test it with real data, you need an instrument, and this instrument is this infamous PARIO, which you see here, which measures. And in our publication we had one example with a prototype of PARIO. Here, these were the observed pressure decrease data with time. Again, you see a time scale on a log scale, so we measure about 8 hours in a measurement depth of 20 centimeters. And these are resulting identified functions. What you see here is the true data. Not really the true data. We don't have the true data in this case because it's a real example, but the data obtained by the pipette method. So the data obtained by the reference method, the pipette method. These are the sieve data. We used 4 of them. And the red line is what we got out of our inverse analysis of the PARIO. So We have done a lot of additional experiments since then to test the rear performance, and of course you see noise and other things. And I cannot show it in this presentation because this presentation is devoted to theory, but I invite you to go to poster number 1106 on Wednesday, and there you will see how the methodology performs in practice. And with that, I thank you very much. If the theory was a bit too quick or too complicated, it's published here in WR in 1900 and I think this year, and it's open access, so everybody who is interested is invited to read the paper. Thank you very much.
Time for a quick question, if someone has a question.
Seems like the volume of the device is quite high compared to the volume of the container. Do you have any effect of the boundary of the container on the...
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. The container has a diameter of 6 centimeters, the device itself of 2.5, I think. So this means that the space is still about 2.5 centimeters between the device. And the nice thing is that in the very beginning of the experiment, you put it in, and then you don't change anything. And also, as compared to the hydrometer, for example, the flow path is just straight. There is no change in the geometry of a flow path during the whole measurement. So from a theoretical side, it's great.
Okay, thank you.